just a little note I think that's helpful to put those sort of ferocious words at the end of this passage from John in context. You have to understand that this is not some kind of rule, that if people don't obey the rule, then they're going to hell. No. Remember, John's Christology works this way. That Jesus is there as the light of the world. And if you do not acknowledge the light, it's because you choose not to acknowledge the light. So, condemnation does not come from anything but willed blindness. And that's really important to keep in mind. Otherwise, you simply misread the text. There are two things on the homiletic agenda today. The major thing, of course, is that this is the Feast of the Trinity. And the second, much lesser item, is that 40 years ago today, I was ordained in the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Springfield, Illinois. And I'd like to get to the larger issue by way of the smaller issue. And I hope this is not just an exercise in self-indulgence, because I think connection can be legitimately made. To start with my ordination. If you've ever been to the ordination of a priest, you know that a great deal of it is spent with the ordinands, the people to be ordained, lying prostrate on the floor in the sanctuary. And there we were, I and my three classmates in the cathedral. And I remember that event vividly because I was wondering, as I was lying there, listening to the Litany of the Saints being chanted and incense flowing around and vestments and the bishop's servant running around, straightening his dresses, where was God? I was in, for reasons, some of which I know, some of which I don't know, I was in, I suppose, a period of what the spiritual writers call aridity, dryness, profound dryness. And there I was, about to be ordained, wondering where God was. I mean, there was the bishop, this man I knew, vastly overweight, dressed into some outrageous garb. There was a choir. There were all kinds of people. There's a ceremony with its medieval act of fealty where your hands are bound and stuck inside the hands of the bishop where you promise obedience. And that I was really prepared for because 8.5 years of seminaries had trained me, above all, to be obedient. So that's what they were looking for. I suppose all of that had something to do with the state of aridity. But then after ordination, I remember we went to the steps of the cathedral, and there was the Irish father of a good friend of mine, kneeling, kissing my hands. I think he had tears in his eyes. His own son was ordained the next year, subsequently left my class. It's an extraordinary experience. Then the first Mass. Some of my best friends from the seminary were part of the ceremony. And then the meal prepared by the ladies of the parish. And all kinds of speeches. And I still in this very much dried out, desiccated condition. But now, 40 years later, it looks like it was probably a useful thing because I was able to see and try to say in my little talk that this is not a celebration of me, this is a celebration of us. And if it's not a celebration of us, it's no celebration of me. But 40 years ago, that was really countercultural. Because clearly the symbolism of ordination and first Mass and the whole accoutrement surrounding that event was the closer you are to God, namely by being ordained, the more you must be removed from people. And I'm not exaggerating. There's not a word, a syllable of exaggeration. The closer you are to God, oh Father, pray for me. Number of nuns who had taught me in attendance, some of the most wonderful women nurses from the hospital. And I found the same order that taught me. And yet one of the most vicious women I ever knew in my life was there too, all dressed in her little black habit. Where is God? And I bring that up precisely because all of this made the whole event extraordinarily complicated. So 40 years later, I'm still asking the question, I suppose, where is God? But with a little more wisdom, I think, a little more understanding. It seems to me that the beauty of a Trinitarian understanding of God, such understanding as we can muster, and it's always pretty meager, as opposed to simply a single person in God, or even God as a duo, argues to what I think is, from what we can get from our own experience, the clearest idea of God. God is triune in the sense that these three persons, to use the analogous language of theology, give themselves absolutely to each other. And the dynamic of three as against two is, I think, telling. Because two is possible, you know, Molly and me. We're aware of sequestering ourselves in pairs. But once you add a third person, the dynamics are all changed. You know, anybody who has a kid knows that. And so what I think is going on in this Trinitarian notion of God is here you have this absolute generosity, not between two, but between three. And that's very much worth your thinking about, and my thinking about. Absolute generosity, absolute self-donation, absolute transparency. And out of that mystery, which we say is the divine, comes this enormous fruitfulness, the creation of the world, the creation of me, the creation of us. And as the book of Genesis says with extraordinary insight, we are made in the image of God, which is to say what? The Lord of creation. We are free. Oh, that's true. But I believe that to be made in the image of God is precisely to move to that point where one is totally permeable by everybody else. The scripture itself says, you know, men and women, when they were first created, human beings, when they were first created, were absolutely transparent to each other. They were naked and unashamed. And that was the destiny, that they had to live through their lives coming to deepen that sense of utter non-withholding of themselves. And that, I believe, is the imaging of God in us at its height. But then, the longer you think about that, the more remote and implausible it becomes. Check your own experience. You go to bed at night, recounting some gratitude those days when we were not too badly damaged by life. when words thought were spoken by others or by me did not act to obstruct that kind of radical, that radical permeability. We live so tightly enclosed, I think, in our own selfhood, so nervous, so fear-filled, so distrustful of each other, of ourselves, of the world, that most of the time we're not even aware, I think, of the depth and pervasiveness of that condition of our lives. So we have the peace of the Trinity, which is a kind of footnote. It's really strange. I mean, you say, this is God, but now we have to have the spread of day to remember God. God is supposed to be present in everything throughout the year, but now we have to think about God as Trinitarian. Very strange. Which argues for what? That somehow the implausibility of God often enough eclipses not only who God is, but who we are. First John writes that God is love. One of the reasons I am Christian rather than Buddhist is that the Buddhists have this sense that what I need to do as my great religious project is to kind of dissolve the ego, the empirical I. And my great flirtation with Buddhism, it finally dawned on me there's something wrong with that, because you cannot say I love you if there's no I to say. However deformed, battered, bent, tattered that I is, still necessary to say I love you. So where do we go with all this stuff? Why do we not hear each other? Don't. That's eminently clear. What's going on in the church today with the hierarchy is simply human life writ large, only more scandalously, because they, on one hand, say we are the representatives of Christ, and yet if there's any group of human beings who are tone deaf, not only tone deaf, but deaf in all kinds of ways, it's the hierarchy. It's the Vatican. Right now, it says it's homosexuals. The secular press, it's pansexualism. It's everybody who's at fault here except us. That argues to what? To a radical deafness. Or another metaphor occurred to me that may be more useful and more accurate. It's not deafness, it's just that there's so much static in our hearing apparatus that we cannot hear. The static of what? I can go back to my ordination. This man, authoritarian, doctrinaire, dogmatic, capable of hearing anybody, doing this in the name of God. Not deception. As I said, what we have there is nothing more than what the static that we all carry around, except there they can divinely warrant that static. What makes it so terrifying and tragic. They cannot hear. And again, finally, the ordination was very bad, because I really mean it. I was put on some kind of pedestal, which interiorly was totally confusing. That pious Irish father kneeling, kissing my hand, was a far deeper and holier human being than I, because I knew it very well. Who should be on the pedestal? Who should be where? said that the priesthood removes one ontologically, of course this is what we say, psychologically, sociologically, from the rest of humanity, providing a counter symbol to what and who God is. The Trinity stands naked and unashamed with each other. That's particularly mysterious dynamic. Radical and absolute neutrality. Here are we. Call finally, Gospel Johnson, participant in that life. So John can say, how can you say you love God and not close your heart to brother or sister?